All right, welcome back to the deep dive. One of the things I always find myself thinking about as a future lawyer is like, what happens when a contract just totally goes off the rails?
It happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. Especially for our listeners who are also law students. And what do you do when your clients put in all this work, time, effort, maybe even materials, and then the other side just pulls the rug out? How do you help them recover for what they've already done? It's a tricky spot.
It definitely is. And law school often really focuses on those breach of contract damages, like the big picture, what your client would have gotten if everything went perfectly right.
Yeah, like the ideal scenario, the benefit of the bargain. Right.
But sometimes that's just not realistic, especially when a contract falls apart before it's fully finished.
Totally. So for this deep dive, we're going to unpack a really practical problem. How can your client recover for the work they've already done when a contract goes sideways? And to help us really get into it, we're going to focus on this pivotal Texas case, Kuhn v. Schoeneman from 1972.
This case, it's a classic, and for good reason.
Yeah.
It really clarifies when someone can get paid for their services, even if the whole contract wasn't finished because the other party messed things up.
Right. And it introduces this idea of quantum merit as an alternative way to get justice. So let's dive into Kuhn v. Schoeneman. Set the stage for us. Who are the players? What was the deal?
Okay, so picture this. We've got a builder, Kuhn, and a landowner, Schoeneman. They had this oral agreement, which is worth noting right away, no fancy written contract here about building houses.
Just a handshake deal.
Seems like it. And the agreement was pretty straightforward. Kuhn builds houses on Schoeneman's land, and when those houses sell, they split the profits.
Easy.
Easy, right?
Seems simple enough.
Right. Kuhn gets to build, Schoeneman gets his land developed, and they both share in the profits. Now, the case details confirm that Kuhn did start building. He actually completed several homes under this arrangement.
So at least initially, it sounds like things were moving along as planned.
Yeah, exactly. They had a working agreement, and Kuhn was doing his part. But then, Schoeneman, he throws a wrench in the whole thing.
Oh no, what did you do?
He decides to sell off the rest of the undeveloped lots, but not just sell them. He sells them to other builders, competitors.
Wow, so he basically cut Kuhn out of the deal entirely.
Exactly. Here Kuhn is, mid project, expecting to keep building more houses based on their deal, and then bam, the rug's pulled out from under him. No more land to build on, no more potential profits to share. And that, my friend, is what we call a material breach of contract.
So Kuhn's obviously not happy about this, right? I mean, I wouldn't be either. What's he do next?
Well, you'd think he'd immediately sue for the profits he lost out on, right? The money he would have made if Schoeneman hadn't gone and changed the game.
Yeah, that seems like the logical first step.
It does, but here's where things get interesting, and where Kuhn v. Schoeneman becomes so important for us as future lawyers. Kuhn doesn't go for those lost profits. He changes his strategy and goes for something called quantum merit.
Quantum merit. Okay, I know we've got a lot of law students listening. Can you break that down for us?
Absolutely. So quantum merit, it's Latin fancy, right? Basically means as much as he deserves. It's a way to get compensated for the reasonable value of the services you provided, even if there wasn't a perfectly formed contract, or if the contract went belly up, like in Kuhn's case.
So instead of saying, hey, you cost me all these potential profits, Kuhn's saying, you got something valuable from my work and you need to pay me for it.
Exactly. It's all about preventing what the law calls unjust enrichment. Basically, making sure someone doesn't get to benefit from your hard work without fairly paying for it.
Got it. That makes sense. So how did this play out in court?
Well, buckle up because this is where it gets even more interesting. At the trial level, the court actually sided with Schoeneman. And get this, they wouldn't even let Kuhn show evidence of how much his work was actually worth.
Wait, what? That doesn't seem fair.
Right. It seems counterintuitive. You'd think if Kuhn's arguing he deserves to be paid for his work, he should be able to show what that work is worth.
Exactly. So, what happened? Why did the trial court make that decision?
It likely came down to the fact that there was this oral agreement in place. The trial court may have thought, hey, there's a contract, even if it wasn't written down. Kuhn agreed to share profits, so that's his only option for getting paid.
So the trial court's thinking was limited to the terms of the agreement, even though Schoeneman broke it.
It seems that way, but here's the crucial thing. When one party's big, like really big mess up, prevents the other from finishing the contract, that initial agreement doesn't always hold all the answers.
Right, like Schoeneman selling off the remaining lots completely changes the situation.
Exactly. And that brings us to the appeal. The appellate court takes on the case, and they're faced with this central legal question. Can someone still recover under this idea of quantum erruit, even if there was a contract, but the other party's actions made it impossible to finish the work?
So it's like a loophole. Like, even if there was a contract, you might have another way to get paid if the other side seriously messed up.
You got it. And in Kuhn v. Shoneman, the appellate court says, yes, absolutely. This is why this case is so important. It lays down some big legal principles that we can use as future lawyers.
Okay, so what did the appellate court say?
First, they emphasized how big of a deal Shoneman's actions were. They said selling those lots to competitors was a material breach, legalese, for a really, really serious violation of their agreement. It wasn't just a small hiccup. It totally undermined the whole point of their arrangement.
I see. It's like the difference between, I don't know, being a little late on a payment versus totally shutting down the project.
A perfect analogy. A material breach, it goes to the core of the contract. It rips away the benefit that the wronged party was supposed to get. In Kuhn, it was clear that Shoneman's actions completely stopped Kuhn from continuing the project and getting any of those future profits they agreed on.
So that's step one. A material breach is what triggers this whole other path to recovery.
Okay, and then quantum erruit and this idea of restitution comes into play. Can you remind us again, what's the difference between that and those typical breach of contract damages?
Of course. With regular contract damages, you're trying to get what's called the benefit of the bargain. You want to be in the same financial position you would have been in if the contract had gone smoothly.
So in Kuhn, that would be all those profits he would have gotten from building the rest of the houses.
Right. But restitution, it's different. It's not about those potential future profits. It's about getting back to where you were before things went wrong.
So kind of like hitting the reset button.
Exactly. It's about what the breaching party gained from your work, even if the contract wasn't finished. So in Kuhn, restitution means compensating Kuhn for the actual value of his work on those houses that Shoneman ended up selling, even if Kuhn didn't get to finish all of them.
So it's about the real, tangible work that was done, not some hypothetical what-if scenario about future profits. You got it. It's like, imagine if Kuhn had bought a ton of lumber to build those remaining houses before Shoneman pulled this stunt. Restitution would be about getting him paid back for that lumber, not the potential profits he might have made from actually using it to build.
Okay, that makes sense. It's like getting paid for the hours you worked, even if you don't get that bonus you were promised because, well, someone messed things up.
Perfect analogy. Mm-hmm. And another key thing the court highlighted in Kuhn is this concept of election of remedies. It means Kuhn had a choice. Chase those lost profits or go for the value of his services through restitution. He couldn't do both.
Why not both? If he's out the money for the work he did and the potential profits, why not go for both?
Because, legally, you can't get compensated twice for the same harm. You have to choose your path. Going for those hypothetical lost profits, that's one way. Going for the value of what you actually did, that's another way.
So Kuhn had to pick which approach made the most sense for his situation.
Exactly. And in his case, he decided to go for restitution.
Hey.
And the appellate court, they said, trial court, you messed up. Kuhn has every right to try and prove how much his work was worth. They reversed the decision and sent the case back for a do-over.
So this whole case, Kuhn v. Shoneman, it's a huge win for anyone who's ever had a contract blow up in their face. It basically says, hey, even if there was a contract, if the other side completely messed things up, you might have a way to get paid for the work you already did.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And this isn't just some obscure legal technicality. This is practical stuff that you as future lawyers need to know.
Yeah.
You're going to have clients come to you with these exact problems. I had this deal and the other guy totally screwed it up and now I'm out all this time and money.
And Kuhn v. Shoneman gives us a framework for how to help those clients.
Right. This case tells us that quantum erruit is a real option, especially when the other side's actions were so bad that they completely torpedoed the contract. And think about it. Proving what you would have made, those hypothetical lost profits, can be tough. Especially in situations like Kuhn, where future profits depended on how the housing market did. Who knows how that would have played out?
Yeah, that can be really speculative.
Exactly. But with restitution, you're focusing on something much more concrete. What did the other side actually gain from my client's work? In Kuhn, Shoneman got those partially built houses that he then turned around and sold, even if it was to someone else.
So it shifts the focus from those uncertain future profits to the tangible benefit that the other side received.
Exactly. And, you know, we can almost use Kuhn to create a checklist for ourselves.
Oh, I like checklists.
Me too. It makes things so much clearer. So first, Was there an actual agreement? It can be oral or written. Second, did the other side commit a material breach? We're talking a major screw-up here. Third, did that breach stop your client from finishing their part of the deal? And finally, did they choose to go after the value of their work instead of those potential future profits?
A handy little four-point test? Boom. If you can check those boxes, you know you've got a potential quantum Meruit claim on your hands.
That's precisely. And this, my friends, is a safety net. It means that even if your client's payment was tied to something uncertain, like future profits from those houses in Kuhn, they might still be able to get paid for the work they did.
As long as the other side's actions were the reason those future events couldn't happen.
Exactly. And there's another really important takeaway here, especially for when you're actually out there practicing law. When you're drafting a lawsuit about a contract gone wrong, think about including both breach of contract damages and quantum Meruit as alternative arguments.
So cover all your bases.
Exactly. You want to give yourself options, right? Because if those lost profits are hard to prove, you've got that backup plan.
Makes total sense. And remember, Kuhn himself initially focused on those lost profits, but he realized that quantum Meruit was a stronger approach.
Right. So by laying out both arguments from the start, you avoid getting stuck in a situation where you can't even present evidence about the value of your client's work, like what happened to Kuhn at first.
Great point. So as we wrap up, what are the big takeaways from Kuhn v. Schoeneman that our listeners, especially the law students out there, should really burn into their memories?
Three big things. First, quantum Meruit and restitution. These are powerful tools to fight unjust enrichment when a contract goes sour because the other side messed up big time. They ensure that you get paid for the actual value you brought to the table. Second, when you're drafting legal arguments, consider including both traditional breach of contract damages and quantum Meruit as alternative claims. This gives you that strategic flexibility we talked about. And finally, remember, even if your client's payment was based on things that might happen in the future, like profits or milestones, they can still potentially recover for the work they already completed.
Especially if the other side's actions prevented those future events from happening.
Precisely. Kuhn v. Schoeneman shows us that.
All right, I feel like we really covered a lot of ground today. Quantum Meruit, unjust enrichment, material breach. It's a lot, but it's so important for anyone dealing with contracts.
It really is. It's about fairness and making sure people are compensated for the value they provide, even when things go wrong.
And now, before we go, I want to leave you with something to think about. This is a little thought experiment inspired by Kuhn. Okay, so imagine this. A tech startup. Two founders. They have this agreement where one founder is going to develop some groundbreaking software, and in exchange, they're going to get a huge chunk of equity in the company.
Okay. Sounds like a typical startup situation.
Right. But then the other founder starts interfering. Maybe they change the project scope constantly, or they don't provide the resources that were promised. Basically, they make it impossible for the developer to actually finish the software.
So another material breach situation.
You got it. Now, the developer walks away after putting in tons of work. Could they use the logic of Kuhn v. Schoeneman to argue for the value of the code they already wrote, even though the software is not finished?
That's a great question. It really makes you think about how these legal principles can apply in all sorts of different situations.
Exactly. And it shows just how relevant Kuhn v. Schoeneman still is, even in today's world of tech startups and constantly evolving business deals. So keep that in mind as you continue your legal journey, because you never know when you might need to pull out a quantum Meruit argument. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
My pleasure. Always happy to explore these legal twists and turns.